What do you think the greatest gift of the holidays is? Internet? I'd say internet. Yes, absolutely. It's of course, as easy as it's always been. You get an iMac 10 minutes out of the box, you're on the internet. But now, Apple gives you your own personal website. You can post your photographs for all your family to see all over the world, and your iMovies. And now you're the purveyor of, you're the generator of, you're the author of great stuff. Isn't it nicer to give than to receive?
The best 30 plus minute op conversation you're gonna hear all week long. I'm your host, Irfan Elijah. Join me today. If you stacked his multiple award-winning Apple books, they'd be almost as tall as his file at the San Francisco Police Department. Leander Caney is here.
Good one.
Actually, with this new one coming out, you might just be threshold where it's a little bit,
yeah,
a little bit taller.
This one's pretty thick, too.
Also with us, he's lost several size 8 shoes inside the rear ends of comm writers who didn't hit their published times. Lewis the Shoeless Wallace is here.
Hey, I like that. That could be my darts name, Shoeless.
You don't like the Squirter? That was a way better nickname.
The Squirter.
Because his bull's eyes are just so accurate, they'll make you cry. Boom, the Squirter. I think that has a lot more memory value, if you ask me. And it looks great on a shirt,
blank
too.
Blank that out.
Okay, we got a great show so for does, you guys you know, this week.
Yeah, delay. There's a big delay on this line. What a bummer.
Holy, that was like a 5-second delay.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, I'm just going to keep plowing ahead, and if you just start talking over me, I'm just going to ignore you and keep going.
It happens all the time.
That's true. That actually is just the way it works. We got a great show for you guys this week. We got to talk about Apple's surprise new event that's coming December 2nd. Man, I never could have guessed the last 2 months of the year would have gone this way, where we had some soft releases of major products and then a press event for apps, which is something that I don't think Apple has ever done. And they're setting it up in a real weird way, so we'll talk about that. We're going to dive into some of the reasons the 16-inch MacBook Pro is just an outstanding update. We got to talk about the new thermal design a little bit, the GPU updates. This is just proving to be one of the best MacBook Pro updates we've seen in a long time. Major improvements in performance here, so we'll touch on that stuff. Also, if you stay tuned to the end, we're doing a little segment about the post-Ive era at Apple. And maybe, just maybe, there are some real advantages to an Apple without Johnny Ive. I know that sounds like blasphemy. And you know what? I feel like it might be. But if you look at what happened with the MacBook Pro, it got thicker. And I don't think that would have happened if Johnny Ive was maybe still the one calling all the shots. So Leander's going to fill us in on some of those details because he's written about 14 books just about Johnny Ive. He's the guy to talk to about that stuff. Before we dive in, let me say thank you to Netgear for supporting this episode. Is your Wi-Fi feeling old? Does it buffer while you're streaming? Does connecting new devices slow it down? Can it handle gaming, video calls, large file transfers all at once? It doesn't matter how fast your internet connection is. If your Wi-Fi older is old and outdated, this might be your problem, Lewis. Jeez. With Orbi Wi-Fi 6 from Netgear, your Wi-Fi will feel new again, that new Wi-Fi feeling. Doesn't it feel great? Wi-Fi 6 is the latest tech that allows more devices to connect and stream simultaneously without impacting speed or reliability. The result delivers the fastest Wi-Fi for all of your devices anywhere in your home. Stream HD, 4K, 8K without buffering. Eliminate lag while gaming and connect more devices to your Wi-Fi than ever before. Plus, the Orbi Wi-Fi 6 is like upgrading your Wi-Fi to first class. If you are ready for the best Wi-Fi ever, you can get it from Netgear and never worry about Wi-Fi again. Check out Orbi Wi-Fi 6 at your local Best Buy or at netgear.com/best Wi-Fi. That's netgear.com/best Wi-Fi. BESTWIFI. Check out those Orbis. We've talked about Orbis a ton on this show. It's one of the best mesh routing systems that you can get. And with the new Orbis, they just made them even better, even faster. And now they have Wi-Fi 6. Your internet's going to be screaming fast. You're going to be the envy of all your friends. They're going to walk in. They're going to see that big blue glowing Orbi, and they're going to say, baby, this guy's got it worked out. Or they may not notice at all, but they'll at least appreciate faster Wi-Fi. Okay, let's start with Apple hosting a surprise event for apps and games on December 2nd. Lewis, when you hear my voice seconds from now, please begin. Tell us all about it.
Yeah, surprise, surprise. Big event on December 2nd. What a shocker. October came and went. We thought for sure there was going to be something. Never happened. We just got the press release stuff. So now Apple surprises us all with this event on December 2nd. Members of the press received surprise invitations from Apple this week. And it's for a first-of-its-kind event to honor 2019's top apps and games. Big New York City event. I don't think we actually know where it's going to be just yet. Our invite must still be in the mail.
Definitely. It's going to be there any day.
Yeah, so Apple, you know, they routinely give out awards for best apps of the year. You know, they love to talk about their favorite apps. And if you look at the App Store, it's just filled with recommendations and things. This is the first time, though, the company has hosted an event to hand out these sort of App of the Year awards, you know. Get ready for the Oscars of apps, as Buster wrote up in his post. This thing's going to take place 4 p.m. Eastern on Cyber Monday, of all days. We don't really have much information about exactly what to expect. Could be that they show off that Mac Pro that they still say is coming in December. Could be that they use it as an opportunity to flog Apple Arcade.
You mean flaunt?
I meant flog. Flog, you know, promote, okay. Talk about how great it is. Who knows?
I thought flog meant hitting it with a shoe.
I think flog means both of those things. It also means does hit it? With a whip.
I didn't know that you could use it to beat someone, but also to promote someone.
Sure, the English language is malleable.
Well, you're the editor. I'll have to defer to you. I know a total of like 300 words, so I'm not going to argue with you.
Yeah, it's you know, it's going to be interesting. It'll be interesting if they live stream it. It'll be interesting to see what you know, what apps they like and all that. I bet you it's just going to be a big love fest for developers. You know, Apple loves to talk about the best developers in the game. They're always bringing them up on stage at their events, and you know, I think it's rightly so. These are people that make the stuff that make the phones and you know, make things fantastic.
So. Yeah. That's a good idea, celebrating all the apps and stuff. It seems kind of weird so close to Christmas, though, but I guess they're digital goods, aren't they? So, you know, it doesn't really hurt them that they don't do it in that sort of three-month prelude to Christmas, you know what I mean?
Well, it's a year-end wrap-up thing, too. I mean, you know, it's the end
but
of
most
the year.
People's year-end wrap-ups come, like, before Thanksgiving, you know?
Yeah, you know, well, that's sad.
Because of the shopping season. But, they do. I mean, they celebrate the design awards like at WWDC, but that's kind of like a closed, you know, non-public event. And they've been doing that for years. They hand out these nice little trophies to the best, you know, I think it's about a dozen or so, the best designed apps of the year. But that's like I said, it's like a WWDC, and it's sort of, you know, it's not a public thing. So it'd be kind of interesting to see this.
I wonder if they're going to broadcast this. I bet you they probably will if they're going to have this lavish event, which is what it sounds like it's going to be. It sounds like they would either stream it or broadcast it at a later date. And also, it's just funny, the idea that they're going to invite all these developers for an evening event on Cyber Monday of all times and do what? I guess hand out awards and champagne and stuff and treat these guys like they're celebrities? That kind of sounds like what they have planned, which is just a little bit funny, isn't it?
It is a bit funny, yeah. I've never heard anything like it, you know. But you're right. I mean, it'd be interesting to see if they do broadcast it. I mean, that seems to me that would be the whole point of this thing, wouldn't it? But you know, I don't know. Do people really want to watch an award show with a bunch of nerdy developers?
That's what
you know?
I was thinking. It reminds me of that show, Oscars. Planet of the Apps, right?
Yeah,
it's just a awards version of that show.
It reminds me of the Webbies.
Yes, yeah, right, the Webbies. Yeah, we went to the Webbies Wired years ago.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. That's pretty cool, actually. The Webbies kind of have carved out a niche. You don't think so? I think I think Dr. Disrespect won a Webby.
Whatever. I mean, award shows, you ever been to one? They're okay. Whatever.
No, I haven't ever been to one.
I mean, they're fun if you get an award, not fun if you lose, and not fun if you've got no skin in the game, so...
pretty fun if you're a journalist sitting there trying to write a story about it.
Yeah, that's fun too.
I hope with the award show they pull up like code snippets and they say, look at this code. Oh, look at the way he declared these variables. And everyone's just applauding, right? Getting riled up. Yeah, oh my, whoa. Look at the way he did that infinite loop. This is unbelievable. I guess we have to stay tuned to see if they're going to broadcast this. It's going to be useful for all of us just because Apple will highlight some of the best apps in the store. So I'm sure we'll have a list of stuff that the editors think are cool. Although I have noticed that oftentimes the things that they highlight are the things that aren't necessarily rated very well. They'll just call out products that they like, and then you'll go look at the app and it doesn't have the greatest of reviews. Have you guys noticed that?
No.
So I don't know.
That's anyway, not the worst thing though, is it?
Not really, but
I put a lot of weight in reviews, I guess. So if I go to something and it's rated 3.5 stars out of 5, then I think, I don't know. I don't know if I want to participate in this product. That's pretty low.
If you think about it, this whole thing, though, it fits in with Apple's, sort of crusade to get shine a light on coding. You know, they just today also announced this, this revamped Everyone Can Code venture, right? I mean, this is one of they keep hammering home that coding is an essential skill for the 21st century and beyond, right? So here's a chance to put a face to some of these apps. Yeah. I think it's all part of their
grand coding
plan.
Is so easy too. It has this mystique surrounding it, but I have a coding background. It's not hard. It's pretty basic stuff. You just learn how to write sentences in particular orders and how to organize code. Now, to be a good coder is not easy, but there's a lot of mediocre. There's a lot of space to be mediocre and still make a pretty good living, right? It's just like there's a lot of baseball players, but you only know the name of like 10 or maybe 5. And all the other guys are just, sitting in the booth chewing sunflower seeds. So it's not exactly the most difficult thing to learn. So I think it's good that they're promoting it because you can make buckets of money. Buckets of money. I could do a whole episode on switching careers to coding and just making buckets of money. It's unbelievable how much money they pay people. In fact, I'm going on a little tangent here. I feel it coming. It's bubbling up. It's percolating.
How big are the buckets?
I've been using this new app called Blind, BLIND. And it's interesting because the whole premise of the app is it will verify people so that you know that they work at a specific company, but you don't know who they are. Their posts are completely anonymous. So you know that if they're talking to you about Google, they have a Google next to their name. They actually do work there, but they're completely anonymous inside the app. And so people are having these unbelievable conversations about compensation, how much money they make, and then how much stock they're getting, and all this kind of stuff. And they have these discussions about how much they should ask for if they have 5 years of experience or 1 year of experience. These guys are making tons of money. It's unbelievable. I see numbers being thrown around. They say they call it TC, which does not mean Tim Cook, which is the way we normally use it. It stands for total compensation. And they'll add up how much salary and stock and other benefits you get when you accept an offer. And these guys are making like $230, $240 a year with 5 years of experience. Is that not unbelievable?
How much?
And they'll get these insane, like $240 a year when you take into account their salaries, their stock options, and then they get bonuses, signing bonuses of like between $20,000 and $50,000. So you just go into this app and you can see all these conversations taking place and you realize just how much money is being made in Silicon Valley. Is somebody's old school telephone going off? Yeah, it sounds like there's like a rotary phone ringing
in the background.
My phone
never rings except when this podcast is being recorded. And it's just so freaking frustrating.
Did I not appropriately shame you before we started? I was like, you're the guy, Lewis, with the notifications.
I turned off all the You know what I'm going to do? I'm going to rip the damn thing out of the wall.
Open up the window and just huck it.
I mean, I haven't picked it up in years. Why do I even have it plugged in?
Well, why does your phone even sound like that? It sounds like the person who answers should say, "Hello, yes, it's me, sir. Bring the fire truck right away. My wagon's on fire."
It reminds me of the good old days, Irfan.
Like a plausible thing that Lewis might say.
That ring is from like the 1800s. So anyway, the app is called Blind. You can check out the app and it's really interesting, these anonymous discussions people are having with each other about all these different tech companies. It's pretty cool. It's pretty cool. You get information that you just would not get any other way. Boy, that was a really long tangent. And this conversation just about this event took way longer than I thought. So I'm going to try and cruise through this really fast. Let's talk about the 16-inch MacBook Pro. Mine comes... Let's see here. I'm opening up the app right now. It's scheduled to be delivered tomorrow. So let's hope that actually happens.
Wow.
Yeah, by the way, when I first ordered it, they said it was going to be delivered December 2nd, and then poof.
Oh, wow. Under deliver and over promise or whatever it is.
I know. The only thing that could delight me more is if Tim Cook showed up and delivered it himself personally in his Kiss the Cook apron. So that should be here this week, which will be great. I'm very excited. Here's why. These benchmarks that I'm seeing for the new MacBook Pro are looking very good. We're in for a major update here. Let me just give you some highlights here, right? So the Vega 20 GPU was the GPU that was available on the previous version of MacBook Pro. And I forget exactly how much it cost to upgrade. If you chose to buy the premium MacBook Pro, so the $2,800 higher-end MacBook Pro, I think it was a $300 or maybe even a $350 upgrade. I forget how much it was. So it was a significant cost to upgrade to the Vega 20. Otherwise, you had to use the 560X GPU, which was old and crusty and not very powerful. The new 5300M and the new 5500M are the new GPUs, and check out these numbers. So we'll start from the bottom. The 5300M is about 10% slower than the Vega 20 in the new Geekbench 5 metal test. So it's barely slower, right, than a GPU that would have cost you $300 to upgrade to. The 5500M, which comes with the higher tier MacBook Pro, the 16-inch MacBook Pro, is 26% faster than the 5300M and 19% faster than the Vega 20 graphics card, and 55% faster than the 555X graphics card, which I know a lot of you out there have. So you're talking major speed improvements here. In gaming tests, which I know no one actually games on their MacBook Pro. I've never met anyone that games on a MacBook Pro, but these are still helpful tests just to illustrate how much faster these GPUs are. The 560X in the Shadow of the Tomb Raider GPU tests was able to crank out 25 frames per second. The Vega 20 was able to crank out 40 frames per second. And the 5500M was able to crank out 49 frames per second. So you're looking at like a 20% increase in speeds. Oh, and the 5300M was able to do 42 frames per second. So like, was that a 5% increase over the Vega 20? All that to illustrate that these two GPUs are almost on par with the Vega 20 or significantly faster, and you don't have to pay anything additional to get them. The 5300M comes with the base MacBook Pro 16-inch, and the 5500M comes with the higher tier MacBook Pro, and then you can upgrade for $100 if you want the more or the additional RAM. So all that to say, the GPU is a major upgrade, and you're not paying anything additional for it like you had to with the previous generation MacBook Pro, which always kind of bugged me that Apple was speccing out a very expensive computer at a high price, but then if you wanted the premium GPU, you had to pay them an additional $300. That just kind of felt cheap, and it felt like they were nickel and diming us. And now they are giving it to you with the cost of the computer. You're getting a much better GPU. Let's talk about the CPU. The CPU in the new MacBook Pro is the same i9-9880H processor as the previous model, unfortunately, and that's because Intel hasn't updated their line since in the last, I guess, year, since Apple has been using those chips, at least not yet. But they've increased the speed in the new MacBook Pro on this chip by about 10%. In a 30-minute stress test, YouTuber Dave2D measured the CPU average speed of both the different MacBook Pros, the last generation and the previous generation, and the same processor in the 16-inch MacBook Pro was able to run at 3.1 gigahertz at a constant speed, whereas the previous model was only able to run at 2.7 gigahertz. So that's a 10% difference. And the only difference between these two machines is the thermal design. So Apple was able to boost the performance of the CPU by 10% just by cooling it better.
Cool.
Yeah, exactly. So it's a huge, huge difference. And you got to think, if you were to pay Apple for faster CPU speeds, you might pay them like, what, 100, 200 bucks for a few, like 100 megahertz increase in performance, which would not translate into a 10% gain in actual performance. And here they're just doing it by cooling the CPU better. And this just perfectly illustrates how much the previous gen CPUs were being throttled just because they weren't cooled enough. And I think this conversation could devolve. It won't yet, but it could devolve into one, into Johnny Ive being and his team pushing the idea that the laptops had to be so thin that they ended up choosing thinness over practicality. And now that he's gone, I kind of wonder if maybe we're heading away from that direction, which would be a very, very, very good thing. Did you guys see the iFixit teardown of the new MacBook Pro?
I did not.
I didn't see it. I saw some of it. I saw some when they were digging into the keyboard.
Yeah, that's the part that I saw too.
Yeah, but
it was really interesting, wasn't it?
Minutes. Yeah, it was pretty interesting. Yeah, they do a great job. Yeah.
What I found fascinating about this keyboard teardown is it reveals exactly what Apple did to put this new keyboard inside the MacBook Pro. And it turns out that this new keyboard with the scissor switches is basically just the Magic Keyboard that they've been selling for years. So that keyboard with the white keys that you can get for the iMac, it's basically just that. They just jammed it into the MacBook Pro. And in fact, it's so similar that you can take the keys off of the Magic Keyboard and put them on your MacBook Pro. MacBook Pro is what you'll be after you spend all the money to buy the MacBook Pro. And so if you want to white out your keys, you could just swap them out and they fit perfectly. And it turns out this is one of the keyboards that, or this is one of the features that pros were asking Apple for the most, because they love the Magic Keyboard. And actually, Phil Schiller did an interview recently where he was talking about a bunch of different things about the MacBook Pro, and some interesting details spilled out that's going to set us up for this discussion around a post-Ive Apple. So let me just dive into this a little bit. Actually, before I do, Leander, do you want to take a moment? This would be a great opportunity for you to talk about the impeccably wonderful, high-quality merchandise available for sale at the Cult of Mac watch store.
Indeed I do. Yeah, I wanted to mention a couple of things, a couple of new items that we've added to the store, which I think are worth pointing out. The first one is some gloves, some really nice touchscreen gloves. And these are the first gloves that we've carried, and they're from Mujo. They are these, you know, they're gloves, and you know, with the cold weather coming up, this is, you know, this is the kind of thing you're going to need for winter. You know, they have tips that you can use on the screen, so you don't have to need to take your gloves off to use your phone. And they have nice rubbery tips as well, so that it you know, you don't drop your phone like it's a slippery eel or a bar of soap. And in fact, Lewis, you reviewed these. Remember that when you took them to Italy, to Florence?
Yeah. Well, I didn't actually write a review of them, but yeah, I tested them out, and because somebody else on our site actually had already reviewed them, I discovered after I got back. Yeah, they work great. You know, I was kind of shocked. You know, you're running around in the cold. I mean, we don't have much use for them here in San Francisco, right? So it was nice to have them over in Florence, where it got down to the 30s, and I was actually running around kind of shivering. And yeah, they work great. I couldn't believe how well they work. You know, right on the touchscreen, you use just as if you don't have a glove on.
Right. Yep, so they're good. I also wanted to call out this bumper case for the Apple Watch from Elkson. It's a Quattro bumper case. They're pretty inexpensive. They protect your Apple Watch. You know, it's like a little rubbery case that works on the Series and Series 5. Comes in a range of colors. And protects your watch from bumps. It fits really snugly. I've got it on my watch. And we've talked about this before. I don't know if it ever got... Did it ever get broadcast on Irfan? How it solves what? This weird problem for me that I have specifically when I'm riding my bike with my Apple Watch.
I don't think so.
So when I'm riding my bike on my Apple Watch, you know, when your hands are on the handlebars, that the back of my hand actually interferes with the digital crown. and it keeps turning the volume of the music down in my earphones.
I've had this happen before.
So, and it drove me crazy. But I was, because it there's no way to sort of stop it, you know, like, I guess actually there is a way to stop it, which I found out afterwards. But anyway, I resorted to like turning my watch the other way around. I turned it upside down. I wore it on the inside of my wrist. I wore it on the inside of my wrist backwards, which is all kind of easy to do because you just change the orientation in the settings. Mm-hmm. But it kept on happening. And so then when I finally put this cover on my watch, it actually sort of juts out. Well, it's kind of flush with the, because it's a cover and has a cutout for the digital crown, it tends to be flush with the crown. And so now it's completely stopped that. So now I don't have that problem anymore. And so I wear it all the time simply because of that one issue, you know, like my watch was turning down the volume on my earphones when I'm riding my bicycle, which I do every day because I commute to work. So for me, you know, it's well worth it, the $10.99 that it costs to get this thing, because it solves this one weird problem that I've been struggling with for days. Anyway, so these are a couple of things you can get in the Apple Watch Store. And if you use the code CULTCAST at checkout, CULTCAST, you'll get an extra, I forgot what it is. It's either 10 or 20% off.
You'll get something, that's for sure. Just try it, see what happens.
Yeah, right.
It's a mystery discount.
Exactly. I can't remember what it is. But yeah, you get
at least you get a
discount. CULTCAST.
Okay. It's definitely going to be more than 1%. And okay, you guys, you've whet my appetite with these products. I got my credit card. It's in my hand right now. I'm ready to go. I don't know where to go.
Do it. Oh, yeah, right. So, yeah, the all-important thing, it's store.cultofmac.com. Store.cultofmac.com. The beautiful Apple Watch store that I'm very proud of. And we had a redesign as well, so it looks really, really nice these days.
It looks fantastic. And I got to say, at the very top, there is a picture of a grown man's quad. And it's very shapely and hairless. I don't know whose quad this is, but it looks fantastic. Are those your quads, Leander?
Those aren't mine, no. Mine is squishier. It's probably Graham Bauer. Actually, no.
It kind of looks like Graham's leg from his other posts.
Yeah. Every day on my Apple Watch, Graham finished a workout. Again.
Thanks, disgusting.
Graham. Yeah, I'm gonna have to cut him off because he's just like exercise shaming me.
Yeah, no man's quad should look like this. Come on, he's working too hard. All right, so store.cultofmac.com. Let's cruise through this story because I want to get to our post Johnny Ive story. How a Magic Keyboard made it into the new 16-inch MacBook Pro. So in a new interview, Phil Schiller, Apple's marketing senior vice president, was talking about redesigning Apple's notebook, the keyboard, whether or not the non-butterfly keyboard will make it into other Apple laptops anytime soon, which I just presumed that it was going to, but turns out that actually might not be the case. Quote, he said, quote, people sometimes underestimate how much work goes into a keyboard, and that's why most keyboards in the industry don't change for 10 or 20 years, Schiller told CNET. We decided that while we were advancing the butterfly keyboard, we would also specifically for our pro customer go back and really talk to many pro customers about what they want most in a keyboard and did a bunch of research. The team took the time to do the work to investigate, research, and explore and reinvent. We kind of touched on this story last week. And the pro users consistently requested a return of the Magic Keyboard. So that's eventually what Apple decided to do. Phil wouldn't reveal whether Apple would consider introducing the keyboard to the lower-end MacBooks, though. He said, quote, we are continuing both keyboard designs, describing Apple's current plan. So it seems like I'm going to guess that the MacBook Air are going to continue with the butterfly keyboard because they're so slim, and then maybe just include the scissor mechanism keyboard.
Doesn't that strike you as really weird?
Yeah, you would think that they would want to just swap it out across the board,
right,
don't you?
Yeah, of course.
Especially because they're having problems with it. But maybe the problems aren't as bad as we have heard that they might be. So from Apple's perspective, it's like the keyboard serves a purpose and they put a warranty on it. But they do keep extending the keyboard warranty for all these products.
Right.
Or they were.
Yeah.
So it seems like if they were going to keep using it, they would have to keep including the extended warranty.
They must be selling the 13-inch at much higher volumes than they're selling the Pros, because they're much more expensive. I mean, these are more consumer machines.
Yeah.
But one thing in this interview, he kept on reiterating over and over again, we talked to our customers, this is what our customers wanted. We talked to our customers, you know, the Pros wanted this, the Pros wanted that, the Pros wanted the keyboard back. And maybe, you know, like you said, maybe they're just not getting that many complaints from the consumer side.
I'm really glad that you said that, because that's going to lead into my question about a post Johnny Ive Apple. But before we go there, let me just finish with this. He was also asked about the touch bar, and he had this to say, quote, "We decided rather than just remove the touch bar and lose the benefits some people get, we could instead add the escape key. While we were doing that, we had already in the MacBook Air created a discrete Touch ID button. People really liked that. So the decision was made to keep the touch bar, but also to create room on either side for the escape key and the Touch ID key. This is the best solution for the largest number of people we've dealt with who had complaints, and we were able to keep something innovative that people were using with touch bar, that some people were using, I guess." End quote. And this just, the reason I found this whole interview really interesting is because Phil kept referring back to, we talked to the Pros, this is what the Pros want, this is what the Pros wanted us to do. When it came to the touch bar, some people really liked that, so we decided to keep it. Correct me if I'm wrong here, Leander Caney, having been the man who wrote all the books. It seems like previously, at least in Steve Jobs' era, they would figure out what they want to do, and then they would just do it,
right.
Better at defining the trend, whereas now it seems like, for whatever reason, them just putting out features that they expect people will like isn't working as well, and now they're maybe post-Johnny Ive taking a different approach rather than just creating beautiful products, involving their community more to help them figure out what the community actually wants. What do you think about that?
Well, I mean, that was the tone of Phil's comments, and, you know, if true, Steve is going to be spinning like a furious neutron star in his grave. I mean,
you think so?
Yeah, I mean, it was his famous quote was like, you know, you can't have customers what they want. They don't know what they want. You know, they the whole Steve Jobs design era and all the big breakthroughs is like, you know, they figure this stuff out in the design labs for themselves, you know, and it always leads to dead ends and whatever, you know, but then they come out with something magical at the end. Yeah. You know, like the whole idea of doing, of asking customers what they want is completely antithetical to the last 20 years of Apple design. Antithetical. But, you know, having said that, you know, for sure they read the reviews, they listen to the feedback. You know, they I don't think they do like formal, you know, what do you call it? Like, what's the word for it?
Focus groups.
Right, yeah.
Yeah.
I would be surprised even now if they did focus groups and stuff like that. But, you know, I mean, a lot of companies do. It would be completely against what everything that Apple's, you know, has done for the last 20 years and its whole workflow, its whole philosophy. I'd be kind of surprised if they would focus grouping, you know, the new MacBook Pro. I think they've, you know, they've listened to what people have said, and the chorus for the last 3 years has been so deafening about the keyboards that they could not possibly have been ignorant to it, you know? So yeah, maybe I think, you know, I got a kind of feeling this is just sort of Phil, the way that Phil's talking, just, you know, I don't know if he's actually talking about their process, you know, he's just using this kind of language.
I don't know. I would agree with you, except for the redesigned thermal system, which is kind of an esoteric thing to update and something that probably not a lot of people know very much about, and yet they still addressed it. And they overhauled the MacBook Pro so that it's even thicker than it was before and heavier, a third of a pound heavier. That's significantly heavier for a product where they scrutinize over every millimeter and how much the thing weighs.
Well, right, but I think it's a bit sort of, don't you think it's kind of a little bit of a simplistic narrative to say that, you know, Johnny Ive wants everything thinner and lighter, and that if at the minute that one product gets a little bit heavier or a little bit thicker, then, whoa, Johnny Ive's out, you know, like he's done.
Isn't the iPhone 11?
Yeah, exactly. And I think there's been a couple of iPhones that were thicker and heavier than previous generations, right?
So you don't think that he was the primary force, or at least part of the primary force, driving this quest to make everything as thin and light as it possibly could be?
Well, sure.
Even though that could sometimes mean sacrificing practical features like
headphone jacks,
a keyboard that works,
SD card slot, yeah, keyboard that works, a sufficient cooling system.
I would say for sure, but, you know, like, for one, this Mac Pro redesign, they did not do this in the last, 6 months when, when Johnny Ive announced his resignation from the company. You know, it wasn't something they just rushed out. This is probably 2, maybe even at least 2 years. I would guess 2 years. Because it takes that long just to tool up in the factories, to get all of the, the whole process, there's so much work that goes into it. They do so much testing with the prototypes. They test for longevity and repairability, serviceability. It's not something they can turn on a dime, this kind of thing. So if it was a year, he was there. He was in charge of the design department. So this is something that's under his watch. Whether his underlings or he was sort of checked out so much that he didn't really pay much attention, I don't know. But this redesign was under his watch. So I think it's a little bit premature to say that this is like a Johnny Ive-less design. I think in a couple of years you could say that with some certainty. But this one, no.
I heard somebody say that Steve Jobs kind of kept the design team in check, and the design team thinks in terms of aesthetic and beauty and lightness and thinness and that type of thing. And then Steve Jobs would sometimes have to push back on them and say, yeah, these are all great things that we should pursue, but we also need to be a little bit more practical in our feature sets. And since he was gone, that affected the way the company would make products because there was no one to push back on the design team.
Well,
when it came to a aesthetic first type of design, what do you think about that idea?
I don't know about whether it was Steve Jobs specifically. The engineering team used to do this. I mean, I interviewed John Rubinstein, who was like the head of hardware under Jobs in the early days when he came back, and he said that there was always this tension with the engineers and the design department, because the design department would say we wanted to do this, and the engineers would say, well, we just can't cram those chips into that smaller space, exactly as you had described. And so there would be, they would try to find a compromise between what the design team wanted and what the engineering team could do. And and of course the whole history of Apple in the last 20 years has been how when Jobs came back, the engineers and the marketers are the ones who are in charge, and the designers didn't really have a voice at the table. And it was Johnny Ive and Steve Jobs, changing the culture, the internal culture of the company, that elevated design to the very, to the loudest voices at the table. So it became design centric. And design is, like Steve Jobs' famous quote has always said, it's not how it looks, it's how it works. And so they always work really closely together with the engineers. I don't think that, they've always been, and of course, the factories too, the engineers who are working how to manufacture these things in their millions, that's super important as well. That also is like another factor that determines like how thin and how light the product can be. So, I think these narratives are kind of like a little bit, it just doesn't work like that. There's tension all the time. There's always give and take. There's always things they can and can't, there's things that they want to do this, but the limits of physics or whatever, or the fact that they can't get all these different components into a device that a certain size. They've always had these are the problems that this is the whole thing. This is the whole design process. These are the problems they have to overcome. The first iPhone, there was, we talked about that. It was like the initial prototypes were like four times the size they are now, because they just couldn't shrink the internal components down to that size. Eventually they did figure it out, but this is the kind of thing they're always doing. They're always talking to the engineers and the cooling team and how to fit the stuff inside these designs they come up with. And sometimes most of the time they're successful, because I think design has most of the power, and they're the ones who are able to push back and say, you've got to do it. And this is what Steve Jobs brought to the table. He was like, okay, you're going to listen, John has made this design, and the engineering team is going to, you're going to make it fit. No arguments.
Right.
So
that's why this update is so cathartic and so surprising, is all of a sudden we got all these changes that are very practical and useful, but not necessarily good from a aesthetic perspective. It got fatter, it got thicker, it's heavier now. But you traded that slight bit of weight, that slight bit of thinness for a lot more performance on the CPU, better cooling performance on the GPU as well. And so it feels like a really good balance now.
Well, I think, the one thing that I will say that I think is very un-Johnny Ive-like is returning to an old design, returning back to the old butterfly keyboard. That strikes me as scissor keyboard. Is something that, I think that he would balk at for sure. you know, like something that's defined his career is like that kind of curiosity and wanting to solve problems and want to go in new directions. And I would have thought that he would have, you know, been pushing for a new design rather than an old one. Mm-hmm. But, you know, if the old one works, you know, people complain, like I'm sitting in front of an iMac now, you know, that looks exactly the same as it did like about 10 years ago, more or less, you know what I mean? So they do tend to, you know, if it works, why fix it? What's that phrase? You know, if it ain't broke, right?
Don't fix it.
Well, they did try three times with the butterfly keyboard, and they still didn't really nail it.
Right, with the membranes and stuff. Yeah, totally.
But I think Apple's motto was, "Well, we tried to fix it, but it's still broke. So now we gotta do something."
Right. Excuse me.
I got some inside information, and we should probably wrap up with this. And this probably contributes a lot to how Tim Cook gets things done in Apple and how they make decisions. I heard from one of my sources that when there's a really tough decision to be made, he comes in looking very stern, and he has a pull cue in his hand. He breaks it over his leg. He tosses both on the floor. And he said, whoever comes out of this circle with their pull cue gets to make the decision, and then he just lets them fight to the death.
Sounds about right.
He's a serious man, that Tim Cook. I mean, his management style isn't one that I understand, but that's how they do it. Darn.
That's how they do it down south.
Is it not effective? All right, well, with that, we should go ahead and wrap it up there because it's almost pitch black outside, and Leander has to ride his bike home in the darkness without getting attacked by a group of wandering vagabonds who now run the streets of San Francisco.
Right, exactly. And also the feral raccoons in the park. And
the feral raccoons with, I almost said diabetes, but they probably also have diabetes from all the trash lying around, but the rabies. Another quick thanks to Netgear for supporting this episode. It doesn't matter how fast your internet connection is. If your Wi-Fi is old and outdated, with the Orbi 6 from Netgear, your Wi-Fi will feel new again. Check out Orbi Wi-Fi 6 at your local Best Buy or at netgear.com/best Wi-Fi. netgear.com/best Wi-Fi. Okay, let's go ahead and wrap it up there. That's all the Clickcast we have for you guys this week. If you want to come say hi or talk to us about any of the stories that we mentioned on today's show, we're all out on Twitter. I'm at Arifon, E-R-F-O-N. Lander is at Elkini. Lewis is at Lewis Wallace. This has been the Clickcast, the best 30-plus minute app conversation you're going to hear all week long. New episodes of the Clickcast come out every Thursday night. I want to thank everyone for listening, and we'll see you guys next time. Now we're done.
Okay, stopping the recording. Gotta go.
Wow. Are you leaving right now?
Yeah, right now.
Are you on your
way? I'm not going to save my recording. I'm just going to abandon it.
You're just going to trash it?
Yeah, I'm just going to leave it here. Okay.
Shoot, we should have promoted that on the show. Too bad we didn't talk about that earlier.
Well, record it now and put it in at the very front.
Put it where?
At the front.
Okay. Here. We'll just. I have the recording still going, so we'll pretend and I'll just loop it in. Oh, hey, Leander.
Yeah?
I wanted to bring this thing up before I forget. Next week, we're doing a very special episode, aren't we?
Yes, we are, F1.
We're totally not recording this segment at the end of the show. We remembered to do it at the beginning of the show. So can you tell us about the next week's episode before we forget?
Yeah, so next week we're going to have a special. We're going to devote the entire podcast to the new Cult of Mac 2 book, version 2, which is coming out in the middle of December. It should be in stores December 17th, but it's actually available for pre-order now on Amazon. So if you're interested, go pre-order the Cult of Mac book too. But next week, we'll have a discussion about the book. We'll have David Priorini, who did a lot of the reporting on the book, come in to talk about it. And so we'll talk about the contents of the book and all that good stuff.
Well, let's talk about the chapters. You got to give us the juicy bits. What in the book is going to be interesting? Tell us some of the story.
I can't remember.
Well, don't tell me the story. Just tell me the chapters.
I can't fucking remember the chapters.
Okay, well, I'll cut that part
out.
Okay, but just talk about like the thing that you just talked about, the segment about the Cult of Mac. collectors, right?
Okay, so there's there's a lot of fun stuff in the book, and it covers everything, you know, like about from the last sort of 10 years of Apple fandom. So we talk about, you know, the line sitters, the whole phenomenon of like people camping out for Apple product launches. There's also like a really great chapter on collectors, private collectors, you know, all these people who have their own museums. There's some kid up on the East Coast who had this crazy collection. He had like these massive donations. He had a warehouse, I think, was donated to him, and then eventually got sold. Anyway, so we'll have Dave here to talk about that kind of stuff.
Fantastic. I can't wait. Let's continue talking about the show for this week and the stories that we have.
Okay, let's do it.
That was terrible.
Yeah. Anyway, hopefully you can fix all that stuff in editing.
Yeah, that's the magic of post. I'm gonna whip that up into something people might actually want to listen to.
Magic of post.